This is Taking Aim with
Groucho Men
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, September 20th, 2005. In the storm's ruins, a rush to rebuild and reopen for business, wrote John M. Broder in the New York Times, September 10th. Private contractors, guided by two former directors of the Federal Emergency Management Agency and other well-connected lobbyists and consultants, are rushing to cash in on the unprecedented sums to be spent on Hurricane Katrina relief and reconstruction. From global engineering and construction firms like the Fluor Corporation and Halliburton to local trash removal and road building concerns, the private sector is poised to reap a windfall of business in the largest domestic rebuilding effort ever undertaken. Today on Taking Aim, Profits and Pillage, the Brutal Aftermath of Katrina. Ralph?
This article in the New York Times is astonishing in the degree to which it is open about capitalist pillage, the war, the class war that is now waged against the dispossessed and impoverished and devastated population of New Orleans and the Gulf. We have to bear in mind that this calamity has unfolded over 95,000 square miles. That is an area greater than that of Great Britain. To understand the magnitude of this disaster, one has to see that the Dust Bowl of Oklahoma that presaged the Great Migration, that transformed the configuration of California, as the Grapes of Wrath so eloquently depicted, is dwarfed by what is unfolding now in the Gulf. And we may be certain that as capitalism reveals its real face and it removes the mask in any last degree, so will the social transformations that follow as this penetrates the awareness, understanding, and the class experience of the oppressed and the workers in the United States. Normal federal contracting rules have been suspended. In the rush to reopen New Orleans, hundreds of millions of dollars in no-bid contracts have been let. Billions more are to flow to the private sector in the weeks and months to come. The article in the New York Times states, Congress has immediately appropriated over $62 billion and is projected to go over $100 billion.
Now that figure has risen to over $200 billion.
And here's how they describe it. In the New York Times, quote, they are throwing money out the door, they are shoveling it out the door, said James Albertine, a Washington lobbyist and past president of the American League of Lobbyists. Every lobbyist's phone in Washington is ringing off the hook. $62 billion? It's only a down payment, unquote. Joe Albo, close friend of President Bush, and indeed the president's 2000 campaign manager, as well as being FEMA director from 2001 to 2003, there's nothing disguised about the cronyism that defines corporate capital. This man, along with James Lee Witt, the Arkansan close to President Bill Clinton, himself the former FEMA director, they are both high-priced consultants offering their services to the major corporations seeking or holding federal contracts, as the New York Times describes it, in the post-hurricane gold rush, unquote.
And James Lee Witt was the advisor to Louisiana government Kathleen Blanco during the first days after the hurricane hit.
Well, Maya, Albo states, he is facilitating the rush of private corporations to cut through federal red tape, that is to say, to obtain no-bid contracts. Who are his major clients? Kellogg Brown and Root, a subsidiary of Halliburton, and the Shaw Group. Now, what we're looking at here is the enrichment beyond anything they've experienced in Iraq. Albo stated that he had proposed to Ultra-Strip Systems, a further client, markets water filtration products, to take up the situation by grabbing on to the no-bid contracts. I called him up. I said, get your units down here. We'll get you the funds. Clients of Mr. Wood, as you mentioned, and who were advising Governor Kathleen Babineau Blanco, are in a position to make huge profits, the New York Times states. Who are their clients? Nextel Communications, Whalen Engineering, Harris Corporation, the giant telecommunications equipment company. They are on a rush schedule to claim the billions of no-bid contracts that are being allocated to them. And by the way, Mr. Witt's company, James Lee Witt and Associates, employs Wesley Clark, the former NATO commander and Democratic presidential candidate, and Rodney Slater, Secretary of Transportation in the Clinton administration. It's a rush to the trough.
Ralph, it's a revolving door between corporate capital and the federal government, and particularly positions very high up in the federal government, the decision-making positions. We saw this with the relationship of the corporate directors of Lockheed to the federal government, or as you can see, with Vice President Dick Cheney and his relations with Halliburton, being first in the government and then Halliburton taking him on as the CEO. And now, as vice president, with all the funds that are then going to Halliburton with many of its subsidiaries, particularly Kellogg, Brown, and Root. We have, in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, particularly with the work that the Army Corps of Engineers was assigned to do, the work that was now having to be done to repair the levees, which wasn't done. The funds were cut prior to the hurricane, when the funds could have made a big difference in New Orleans. Immediately afterwards, the repair of the breaches was assigned to three companies on a no-bid contract. No-bid means the government decides a certain amount of money based upon what the estimate is submitted by the contractors themselves, and then the money is awarded to these contractors. What's interesting about these no-bid contracts is usually they are a first estimate. If the contractor decides that more money is needed, the government agency usually follows through, most often follows through. We see this particularly with the Department of Defense, and now in the crisis of Hurricane Katrina, we will see this with the Army Corps of Engineers. The three companies are the Shaw Group, Kellogg, Brown, and Root, of which we spoke before, and Bow Brothers Construction of New Orleans. Bow Brothers is the largest construction company in the New Orleans area and has been responsible for much of the levee construction. Perhaps their construction wasn't up to the standards that would have prevented the destruction of the levee itself. The Shaw Group, based in Baton Rouge, is a $3 billion a year construction and engineering firm. It received two contracts of up to $100 million each, one from FEMA and the other from the Corps of Engineers, to work on levees, to pump the water out of New Orleans, and to provide assistance with housing, meaning the temporary housing, the trailers that are being hauled into the Louisiana area. Kellogg, Brown, and Root, parent company Halliburton, has a $500 million five-year contract with the Navy. This is an upon assignment contract where the Navy calls upon Kellogg, Brown, and Root to provide emergency repairs at military installations, and now they've called upon them to work at several of the naval facilities, three in Mississippi, as well as the Stennis Space Center. And also Halliburton has been called in to assess pump and infrastructure damage in New Orleans and to construct a facility to support the recovery efforts, meaning to provide the infrastructure for temporary housing and also office space. FEMA said it has suspended normal bidding rules with the contracts to the Shaw Group and also another very large company, CH2M Hill, which is an architectural and engineering firm that does a lot of work on schools. You should check out in your community the involvement of CH2M Hill in many of the school projects in your community. They're based in Denver, floor of Aliso Viejo in California. And another company that comes in, one very close to former Secretary of State Schultz, and that's Bechtel, based in San Francisco. These are the primary companies. They've had long-standing contracts with FEMA. They've had long-standing contracts with the Department of Defense. Ralph?
Well, the spokesman for CHUM Hill, John Corsi, stated these contracts would all be on a no-bid basis. The sheer volume of the contracts and the speed at which they are being issued has made its impact. Daniel Bryan, director of the Project on Government Oversight, quoted in the New York Times, stated, "It's bringing out the greedy and the self-interested out of the woodwork. It's very painful. You are seeing the equivalent of war profiteering here, except it's disaster profiteering. It is simply grabbing the money as is channeled out to these companies by a supine Congress peopled by those who worked for these very corporations prior to their being placed in so-called public office. Bechtel is $17.4 billion in annual revenues based on such allocations. And Bechtel, which is, as they say, very much involved in so-called emergency response work, has been in the forefront of obtaining these huge contracts. And indeed, as they mentioned, political contributions, well, that's just part of what we do." That's the New York Times. It is amplified by what the Los Angeles Times has to say, Maya.
But before we discuss the Los Angeles Times, let's remember that the few inspector generals, the people who provide the accounting oversight, who will come in and review these contracts, cannot keep up with the minutiae, the detail of how you spend $100 million, $200 million into the billions. And consequently, when you get a company like Kellogg Brown and Root or various other subsidiaries of Halliburton or Bechtel or Shore or Fluor or CH2M or the other companies working for the federal government, what you have here is misappropriation of funds, misuse of funds, and then when they're caught, what you have is possible repayment of a little portion of these funds. So the money that comes from our tax dollars or increasing the debt and causing for future generations extreme indebtedness and hardship, all this money is then appropriated through the federal government into the coffers of these companies. Let's just look at some of these FEMA contracts specifically, Ralph, before we go on to another aspect of the spending of money after Katrina. The Shaw Group will have $100 million to refurbish existing structures. Bechtel, another $100 million for temporary housing in Mississippi. And remember, Bechtel also has been awarded $3 billion in Iraq contracts. The Fluor Group, major GOP donor, $100 million to construct temporary housing. CH2M, $100 million in temporary housing in Alabama, was recently awarded $41 million in Iraq contracts. And another company of which we didn't speak yet, and that's Dewberry, $100 million for hazard mitigation, technology assistance, inspections, and management. And then we have also through other government agencies, $100 million here, $100 million there for transportation, environmental protection, health and human services, as well as the Shaw Group through other contracts was awarded for roof repairs and other debris removal, $100 million again. And another company, Asbrit, four contracts for debris removal in Louisiana and Mississippi, awarded over $500 million. And another company, Phillips and Jordan, over $500 million. That's over $1 billion to date on debris removal. Ralph.
Much of this so-called repair work is, in fact, the replenishment of businesses, and the temporary housing of which you speak is not for the population. The temporary housing is for the personnel of these very corporations for the most part. In fact, what is very clear about what's going on here is defined by the Los Angeles Times in its article headlined, "Speculators Rush In As the Waters Recede." Would-be homebuyers are betting that New Orleans will be a boom town. The city's poorest residents will be forced out. That's the subtitle by David Streitfield in his article in the Los Angeles Times. The real estate agent has $10 million in the bank, wired by an investor who has instructed her to scoop up houses, any houses. Oh, flooding's no problem, Paris's newspaper ads advise. Her backer, a Miami businessman who specializes in buying storm-ravaged property at deep discount, something that has paid dividends in hurricane-prone Florida. In Hurricane Katrina has taken a vibrant real estate market and made it hotter. Large sectors of the city are underwater, but that's only increasing the demand. And in the flooded areas, speculators are buying the properties on the cheap, counting on the redevelopment of New Orleans for a great boom. The land rush has long-term implications in a city where the poorest residents have been flooded out and removed. It raises the question, what kind of housing is going to be made available to those without a six-figure salary? If New Orleans becomes a high-priced enclave without a mixture of culture, races, and incomes, what will be lost? What will be lost is the working class, black and poor population who have been driven out of their homes, their entire life savings, their families, their possessions, their everything destroyed. For what? For a speculation based upon rampant profiteering. There's a question here, said Ann Oliveri, the senior vice president with the Urban Land Institute. They are not just abdicating here, but they are abandoning you to the city to whoever shows up. Well, who do you think is showing up? Quote, it's a seller's market, and they're rushing to obtain the benefits. The market's going to move up here. This storm was supposed to be the end of the city, said Arthur Sturbkow, president of New Orleans-based Latter & Blum, the largest real estate brokerage on the West Coast. If anybody had told me 2 weeks ago that I'd be getting these calls and emails I'm getting, I would have thought he was ready for the psychiatric ward. They want to buy the houses intact or flooded. Commercial properties are outrunning those who want to sell by a factor of 20 to 1. We're pressing everyone into service just to answer our phones. These eager would-be buyers are drawing their inspiration from Lower Manhattan, which proved a bonanza for those smart enough to buy the condos immediately after the 7-Eleven attack. All this will lead to what Sturbkow delicately calls a reorientation of New Orleans. Well, we're going to start with a clean sheet, fix it, and get it right. Those homes that those people were in were only held together by termites. What the owners of the cities estimate is that over 150,000 flooded houses will immediately be taken out through what is called reorientation. Black New Orleans residents say they know what's coming. Melvin Gilbert, maintenance crew chief in his 60s, stood outside an elegant hotel in the French Quarter and recalled how his neighborhood had been gentrified. Half a century ago, the French Quarter had a substantial number of black residents. Then they began offering them $10,000 for their homes. Well, they bought the places for $2,000, and the people took it and ran. The speculators restored the houses. They then escalated in value. That's the dynamic when the floodwaters recede in the heavily black neighborhoods east of downtown. Who should own New Orleans? The first posting seeking New Orleans property in any condition or location is already on Craigslist on August 29th while the storm was still raging. It has been repeated numerous times over the weeks. It's very clear what we're learning here. The speculators move in, and the flooding of New Orleans was their ticket to a gold rush. Nothing mysterious about its being allowed to happen.
Nothing mysterious. They bring in the troops, and they surround New Orleans, where you have to go through checkpoints to go in or go out. And this is true in other cities. Some of the cities in the Gulf region are actually off limits, completely surrounded by large rolls of barbed wire. And then you control who does the construction. And they are bringing in people from out of state. They're not hiring the residents of the area, providing work for them there. And they are bringing people in from overseas, particularly for the oil pipeline repairs. Notably, what we have in New Orleans is that the suggestions of how to rebuild the city. One of the ideas was to create a massive free enterprise zone for New Orleans. You have in areas such as Los Angeles, Detroit, San Francisco, many parts of the city, sections which are called free enterprise zones, where all the normal regulatory rules, the rules that determine wages and hours, the rules that determine building codes, are often waived, as well as there are tax incentives for the companies that come in, real tax breaks, such as not having to pay the city fees or the city or state or even federal taxes that would be imposed upon businesses. And the notion has been to create a free enterprise zone in New Orleans, and this would privatize many of the services that are now existing. Some of the ideas, and this is coming from the Heritage Foundation and the American Enterprise Institute, conservative organizations very close to President Bush and Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney. And along with the suggestions of the free enterprise zone is to expand on the notion of school vouchers. Instead of giving more money to the public schools, for instance, that are taking on the children who are displaced from Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama, that these students would be given vouchers so that they could attend any other school. In other words, further privatization of the public school system. These are the ideas that are coming forward in the aftermath of Katrina, ways to privatize government functions, as we see with the role of the reconstruction efforts, creating free enterprise zones, initiating school vouchers instead of increasing the funds that would go to public schools. Ralph?
$200 billion is the beginning of the price tag, and we know it's going to go higher than that. When Bush was asked the question how it will be paid, he said, well, not through raising anybody's taxes. No, he says, we'll simply cut programs that are really not necessary. What does that mean in translation? The same agenda that had been already on the board across the country and the part of both the Bush administration and the Democratic Party in Congress is to be escalated. Just to make clear that in the immediate period preceding the bombings in London, Karl Rove was on the hot seat over his presumptive role in leaking the information about Victoria Plame, who certainly should be leaked and exposed, but that's another issue. Nonetheless, the man was on his last political legs until the bombings in London changed the subject, as these false flag operations are designed to do. Now Mr. Rove is assigned the role of key player in overseeing the pillage that is unfolding in the Greater Gulf. How to ensure the very rich stay that way? That's the headline of the New York Times on September 9th. And it's addressing itself to the question of removing the estate tax on the very wealthy. Repeal will have no impact at all on the vast majority of people, they claim, but what it will do is take away any semblance of taxation of the vast fortunes that are being accumulated by those who are in the process of pillaging New Orleans. The estate tax will, in fact, be removed. Repealing the state tax will reduce government revenues by $280 billion, with that money staying in the 500 wealthiest estates each year. That's the headline in the New York Times. What happens with the calamity in New Orleans? It's seen as an opportunity. Disaster used as political payoff. That's the headline in the New York Daily News. Quote, and it begins as follows. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has done it again. Under fire for its woeful response to Hurricane Katrina, the Federal Disaster Agency has turned hurricane relief donations into a vast political payoff. All last week, FEMA bureaucrats gave prominent placement on the agency's website to Operation Blessing. The Virginia-based charity run by right-wing evangelist and Christian Coalition founder Pat Robertson. For anyone wishing to donate only cash, the agency's site listed the names and phone numbers of the Operation Blessing. This list is followed by a second longer list of several dozen religious charities, many of them associated with Operation Blessing. Operation Blessing has a particular history. In 1994, during the Rwandan genocide, Pat Robertson used his 700 Club's daily cable operation to seek vast sums from the American public for humanitarian supplies into Zaire, nominally to save Rwandan refugees. The planes purchased by Operation Blessing, the New York Daily News tells us, did a lot more than ferry relief supplies. An investigation revealed that the planes were used to transport equipment for a diamond operation run by a company called African Development Corporation. Who do you think was the principal executive and sole shareholder of the African Development Corporation, the diamond mining company? Why, Pat Robertson himself. Robertson had landed the mining concession from his longtime friend Mobutu Sese Seko, then the dictator of Zaire. Investigators concluded that Operation Blessing induced contribution from the public through the use of misleading statements. Robertson did not attempt to deny the profiteering from the diamond company that he was the sole beneficiary of. The singlest U.S. recipient of the charity's largesse, according to its financial reports, was Robertson's Christian Broadcasting Network. The money raised for refugees was used for the Christian Broadcasting Network. But as with Mobutu, Robertson had another interest. He was a defender of Charles Taylor, the former dictator of Liberia, under indictment for war crimes. In fact, Robertson had millions invested in the Liberian gold mine granted him by Taylor. Now, this is indeed the role of Operation Blessing, but it's the role of all of the recipients of these funds that are being doled out in their billions. Business starts stirring in New Orleans, the New York Times tells us on the 11th of September. Not as usual, bones broken, vital organs far from functional, but the pulse is beating in the streets of the Big Easy. The Drury Inn has welcomed its post-hurricane guests on Friday night. Housekeeping may be weekly and not daily. The exercise room was off limits, but the drivers are collecting dozens of Cadillacs taken from dealerships during the chaos, and dozens of men with walkie-talkies work on wiring the 51 floors of One Shell Square, the city's largest office building. Now there are dozens of them being prepared for restoration. And all of these funds are designed to what? Cleanse New Orleans of its poor and its black population and direct the funds into gentrification and the refurbishing of massive casino-based speculative industry that will define the new New Orleans. Ma'am.
Well, Ralph, the New Orleans executives have been planning the revival, as you state. Gary Rivlin, September 10th, wrote in the New York Times, the New Orleans executives, and they're planning their revival, have set up an establishment in exile, a beachhead in a government annex in Baton Rouge, across from the state capital. And the power brokers, the business leaders, according to Rivlin, they're concocting big plans, the most important being reopening the French Quarter within 90 days, with the airport open. And the mayor of New Orleans, C. Ray Neglin, hoping to get almost 200,000 people back into New Orleans, they were on a roll. That is until further hurricanes were appearing off of the Florida coast. And the Coast Guard Vice Admiral Allen said, halt. This can't go on. We cannot have without a 9/11 system, that is an emergency system, without backup power, having so many hundreds of thousands of people in New Orleans. And we started having a little war of sorts between the mayor of New Orleans and the business community of New Orleans and the martial law state, which has its own plans for how to go about rebuilding New Orleans. According to the businessmen, they're already planning Mardi Gras at the end of February. That is February of next year. And they're lobbying for a 2008 presidential nominating convention and even the next available Super Bowl. they're still thinking in emergency mode and not thinking strategically, said J. Stephen Perry, the chief executive of the New Orleans Convention and Visitors Bureau, referring to the federal government. He said, but we're thinking strategically. They understand the hurdles are formidable, but they're going about them one by one, step by step. F. Patrick Quinn III, who owns and operates 10 hotels in and around the French Quarter, has set up shop and with another business associate is making frequent trips to his hotels, and where the guests are not only the journalists, the employees of the of FEMA, but they're hoping to have the businessmen who are coming in looking for contracts staying there too. The warehouse district, the central business district of the city, are dry, and they expect within 3 weeks to have water and sewer systems functional soon after that, and parts of the city are getting power. Tourism is king. That's their statement. It brings in $7 to $8 billion a year. And they want to get the tourism. Perhaps it'll be tourism to look at the devastation of, that can be wrought when the federal government and the state and local governments don't support the infrastructure of a city. That'll be the new type of tourism. The new Disney World will be the disaster of New Orleans. But meanwhile, they are setting up, trying to get the casino companies to rebuild their casinos. And perhaps as in Mississippi, where in Biloxi and Gulfport, the offshore casinos were destroyed on barges, they're going to lobby for state regulatory changes to allow the casinos to be on shore and to build cities similar to Las Vegas. This is the orientation for New Orleans, not an organic community, one that derives from the historical interplay of people, but to have from the ground up the remaking of Las Vegas style, profit-driven, even more so, but this in an organized fashion, profit-driven communities. Right.
How was this to be done? It required the elimination of the population, the poor, the exploited, the disadvantaged, the black working class.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Profits and Pillage, the Brutal Aftermath of Katrina. Ralph?
The Wall Street Journal on the 7th of September quoted Representative Baker of Baton Rouge. We finally cleaned up public housing in New Orleans, he was telling a prominent lobbyist. We couldn't do it, but God did. Well, we'll see who plays God in this respect. But there's something to be said about Mr. Baker. Because Baker, who founded his own real estate company in the 1970s and has made his fortune, and it is a fortune based upon speculation and based upon exploiting people and buying up houses at next to nothing and then gentrifying and selling them for a fortune, has continued his predatory role as a congressman. Richard H. Baker, Republican of Louisiana, and Chairman Michael G. Oxley, Republican of Ohio, of the House Financial Services Committees, are in talks with House colleagues about amending a bill regulating the housing finance companies so that those areas affected by the hurricane will be the first to receive money from a fund that had been designated for low-cost housing. But that fund designated for low-cost housing is to be allocated to the likes of Mr. Baker and Oxley. And they want to change any requirement that Fannie and Freddie Mae, the federal funding services, put aside 5% of after-tax profit to fund the construction or rehabilitation of housing for low-income renters and home buyers. No, they want those funds channeled to their companies to use the fund to give the money, and I'm quoting again here, to their political allies. Federal government is taking the profits and allocating them, the profits that have already been made, to a subsidizing of further funding of these same predators. Representative Richard Baker introduced a bill circulated on the Hill by Morgan Stanley, the brokerage firm, to rein in all state regulators and prevent them from forcing structural changes in the securities industry. SEC Chairman William Donaldson was part of this process. Mr. Baker was tied to the Abramoff scandal. Paul Sawyer, staff director for Representative Baker, is listed among the names of those 100-plus Hill staffers, congressional members, and think tank denizens who visited Saipan and were bought off with bribes, according to the public record, during the Abramoff junket in May 2005. Here is the link to the operation. The number one donor to Mr. Baker is the insurance industry. It's the number one beneficiary of his machinations. And sure enough, U.S. President George W. Bush issued an executive order on Thursday allowing federal contractors to rebuild in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina by paying below the prevailing wage. They are eliminating the protections that require contractors to abide by a prevailing wage so that they can now pay people far below the minimum wage, let alone the prevailing wage, as these billions go into their pockets for speculation and profiteering on the backs of the devastated, the dying, the poor, the disadvantaged, and the driven out.
Well, Ralph, you're referring to the Davis-Bacon Act, which was enacted after the Great Depression, and that is in relation to federal contracts. Often you'll find cities pass their own form of Davis-Bacon legislation. And the prevailing wage isn't necessarily the union wage, but in areas where unions are a strong force with public contracting, the prevailing wage turns out to be the union wage. And in the New Orleans area, this is a little bit over $14 an hour. Now, this is important. It's an important piece of legislation because it means that corporations can't undercut the standard of living for an area. And it brings up the standard of living because it is usually these public contracts that create a lot of infrastructure work within a community. There's another federal law that relates to prevailing wage in service industry. Health and Human Services, and service jobs that are related to construction and other aspects such as meal distribution. And while Congress hasn't done it yet, it is considering waiving the prevailing wage for the service industry, too. This is going to undermine the standard of living in these already low-income communities of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. There is a mass migration in the area, and the Washington Times, not a progressive journal, in an article by Joyce Howard Price, September 15th, neighborhoods likely to be razed in cleanup. So it's obvious to everyone who has any eye to see that what you're going to have is a reformation of the areas, not just New Orleans, but Mississippi and Alabama. What they write is, the Environmental Protection Agency officials and environmental specialists said yesterday that the cleanup of flood-soaked New Orleans will require raising neighborhoods, comprehensive disinfection, and extensive removal of soil and sediment infused with chemicals and bacteria. So we have here referring to areas where the houses are intact. This isn't like areas of the Mississippi coast, such as Pass Christian, where only 50 to 100 houses are left standing, or the town of Waveland in Mississippi on the Gulf Coast, where only 24 residents remain out of 7,000, and the rest are in shelters because of the devastation and destruction of those towns where all the houses were leveled by the storm surge. Here in New Orleans, according to Robert D. Buller, director of the Environmental Justice Resource Center at Clark Atlanta University in Georgia, quote, the whole city of New Orleans has the potential for being a giant superfund that is a toxic dump site. And EPA Administrator Stephen L. Johnson said tests continue to show high, unsafe levels of sewage and lead in New Orleans water and evidence of other chemicals such as chromium, copper, iron, and sodium. We have to note that although the levels are not as high as anticipated, the levels are still very unsafe. He characterized, that is, Stephen L. Johnson, the EPA administrator, he characterized Hurricane Katrina as, quote, the largest natural disaster the EPA and the nation have ever faced. And he said it's impossible to speculate on how long it will take to create a safe condition in New Orleans because these are carcinogenic polychlorinated biphenyls or PCBs that have been in the New Orleans floodwaters. Von Robeck, the spokesman for the Federal Center for Disease Control and Prevention, stated the key is what kind of pollutants are in the water. So you can't predict how long it's going to take. But already, people who have been in the hurricane zone and were in the contaminated floodwaters, several have died, and many more have bacterial infections that penetrated open sores. There have been outbreaks of norovirus caused by consuming feces-contaminated food or water that have shown up in the shelters. So we have here the newspapers realizing that neighborhoods are likely to be razed in the cleanup. Aside from that, the Great Katrina Migration is how Peter Greer of the Christian Science Monitor termed what happened in the aftermath, the evacuations of the cities. In 14 days, the hurricane scattered as many as 1 million evacuees across the United States, the largest dislocation in 150 years. Ralph.
Well, as we mentioned, Maya, this is a territory as large as that of Great Britain. To try to understand the magnitude of this calamity and the magnitude of the exploitation and of the pillage and of the profiteering that's following in its wake. In one parish alone in New Orleans, 150,000 houses have been ruined and will be demolished. And indeed, the billions of dollars that are required to rebuild the infrastructure for power generation and distribution, for water supply and sewage treatment, roads and bridges, and all of those essential infrastructure aspects, not to mention the restoration and upgrading of the levee system, which was deliberately left undone and compromised as a means of allowing New Orleans to be exposed to this calamity. They have to remove 20 million tons of debris, and as you indicated, much of it contaminated with toxic waste. But all of this is being directed towards the speculative profiteering on the buildings and on the land and on the structures that are to be replaced for money grubbing and for vast profits at the expense of the poor and the workers who have been driven out of, by this calamity. It is estimated that the insurance company liability will be of as much as $40 billion. Again, this is dwarfed by the $200 billion that they are allocating. But it should be borne in mind that this $200 billion is a fraction, or just it's a drop in the bucket compared to the profiteering that goes on, the tax cuts. The tax cuts alone, which are now going to be escalated and continued, that have been given to the great corporations, exceed $2 trillion. So what did the what was the response of the Bush administration to the calamity? Here is a piece in the World Socialist website on the 19th of September. Tax cuts to continue, social programs to be slashed in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. You bet it's going to cost money, Bush said. I'm confident we can handle it. We're going to cut unnecessary spending. What is unnecessary spending? Public housing, libraries, social services, pensions, health care. What's unnecessary to this ruling class? The very sustenance of the working population that they exploit. As the New York Times put it, an administration said the White House and Congress are looking for specific spending cuts, starting with about $20 billion identified as coming from entitlement programs for social services. That means programs for rebuilding devastated areas and aiding evacuees. That means $60 billion from Medicaid, cuts to the budget of the Army Corps of Engineers, which is supposedly responsible for maintaining the infrastructure, such as the levees surrounding New Orleans. These are the very entitlement programs they are going to devastate. The very programs that they had prevented from being implemented that would have prevented the flooding of New Orleans are to be gutted in the name of the $200 billion slush fund for the corporations. Besides Medicaid, the two other major entitlement programs that they have targeted are what? Social Security and Medicare, slated for the chopping block. In fact, the government announced that basic Medicare premiums are going to be targeted. Food stamp programs are to be slashed.
Well, Ralph, they announced that Medicare premiums are going up 13%, and they went up 12% last year. And this is the premium for people who are over 65. It's the major health insurance program of the United States, along with the Medicaid program for very low-income people and children.
And no major Democratic Party official has attempted to expose the administration's statements that call for rescinding the administration's or call for rescinding the administration tax cuts, which were passed with the support of House and Senate Democrats, including Senator Mary Landrieu and Senator John Brew, both of Louisiana. The combined cost of those tax cuts was over $2 trillion, which would have paid for this hurricane damage figure how many times over? No Democrat called for any accounting for with respect to this pillage. In fact, in Saturday's Washington Post, an important article written by Donna Brazile, the Democratic Party policy advisor and campaign manager for Al Gore, best expresses the attitude of the Democratic establishment. Under the headline, "I Will Rebuild With You, Mr. President," Brazile heaped praise on Bush, declaring, "Watching him speak from his heart, I could not have been prouder for the president and the plan he outlined to empower those who have lost everything and to rebuild the Gulf Coast," unquote. The Democratic Party lining up to the spending cuts on social infrastructure, the social programs, the promotion of privatization and deregulation, the tax cuts for the wealthy, the conditions of neglect, poverty, and devastation that have allowed this hurricane to target the most vulnerable and to drive them out and reconfigure the face of New Orleans for profiteerings.
Ralph, I think we have to look at the reality, the hard reality of what is going to be the largest migration in the 150 years of U.S. History. And that is, let's look particularly at one small area. We talked about Waveland, we've talked about New Orleans, and we've talked about other communities, but St. Bernard's Parish, a parish being like a county on the outskirts of New Orleans, officials said that virtually all of the parish's 27,600 houses will have to be bulldozed, and that it will take more than 6 months before the lucky few whose homes can be repaired are allowed to return. What happens when someone's home is bulldozed? The USDA, one of the mortgage companies of the federal government, has said that 50,000 low-income residents are given a 90-day minimum moratorium on their mortgage payments. Well, that's 3 months, and here we have 6 months before people can return. The government is trying to negotiate with banks so that people don't have to pay their mortgages when they are evacuated and in the coming months. That doesn't mean the money isn't due, but perhaps there will be a waiver of mortgage payments during that time. But what happens when you want to rebuild? You have damage, or you may have total damage of your house. Your mortgage still exists. You still owe that money. And if you need money for construction, you can have, through FEMA and the other federal agencies, you can get a loan. It's a low-cost loan. But you will still have to make payments on that. In other words, the money that you spent on your house to purchase and the money that you have in your mortgage, because most people do not buy their homes outright, but they have mortgages, you are increasing your indebtedness. And in order to get this loan, you have to show creditworthiness. So if you are a very low-income person and you have in any way, shape, or form, anything that is a blight on your credit, you will not even be able to obtain this additional indebtedness to repair and, in many cases, rebuild entirely your home. This is an indebtedness that most people will not be able to assume, and consequently, as we mentioned before, the real estate speculators are moving into the area knowing that people are going to have to, are forced to sell their home because they will not be able to repair or rebuild their homes, even if they want to. In other words, they will have relocated for a long period of time. During that time, they're going to have to take on new jobs. Their children are going to have to be in new schools. They're going to have a life in the new community. But even if they want to return to their homes in Louisiana, Alabama, or Mississippi, they will not be able to do it because they cannot afford to do so. Ralph.
Can the hospitals reopen, asks the New York Times on the 14th of September. Subtitle, It's a Matter of Money. The New Orleans medical system has been devastated by Hurricane Katrina. No one can say how many hospitals will ever reopen. Local officials call for a central plan, but decisions will be based mainly on economic forces, not the city's health care needs. Deregulation at the state and federal level over the last decades has meant the main force in the hospital industry is the invisible hand of the marketplace. Of the 16 hospitals in the immediate area of New Orleans, 13 were closed. Will they be reopened? The economy drives everything. It depends on the profits they can make. Indeed, the entire analysis of the healthcare system and of the hospital system in New Orleans makes very clear those hospitals will be reestablished which can make money. That means they won't be available to the poor. That means they'll be only there to profit and for no other service, certainly not that of medical care. What does the record show about the looting? Quote, big time looting is big oil's looting, President Bush. There ought to be zero tolerance of people breaking the law during an emergency such as this. In the midst of this charity, big oil looted the nation. Pumps instantly shot past $3 a gallon, $4 a gallon in sight. $14.5 billion in tax breaks have been allocated to oil in the new energy bill. It is not billions, but hundreds of billions of dollars of profit that have been made by the exploitation of oil in just this recent period. The richest 1% of American households have amassed more than $10 trillion in wealth. That's 40% of the total national wealth. The combined net worth of these multi-billionaires is greater than the total wealth of the bottom 95% of the population. This inequality is as stark as the inequality in ownership. Indeed, what we are looking at here is the deepening of exploitation on a scale not before perceived or experienced in the United States. Bush has dispatched his top strategist, who? Deputy Chief of Staff Karl Rove, to assemble ideas from agencies, think tanks, lawmakers, and state officials to guide the rebuilding of New Orleans and the relocation and removal of flood victims, provide a response that will allow for a transformation of the Gulf and the New Orleans area. We've seen what that transformation is. It's the transformation of war on the poor. It's the transformation of free enterprise zones. It's the transformation of a speculator's bonanza. It is a boom for business after Katrina. It is the war, the class war that is waged in our people. And that's why there are 70,000 troops in New Orleans.
Ralph.
Yes, Maya.
Time is up. You've been listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Shonman
and Maya Shon. Our program today, Profits and Pillage, the Brutal Aftermath of Katrina, will be up on our website, www.takingaim.info, and on the WBAI website, www.wbai.org. Please contact us at takingaim@pacbell.net. That's PACBELL.net. We'll be with you next week.
I'm not to be king now, I don't know how to keep it in the eye. That's a touch in the side.